I think the first thing you want to ask your character is, are they capable or are they not capable in the physical thing that's demanded of them? Right. Mm-hmm. So in the example of the Titans characters, they're hyper, like they're hyper capable. They're not only highly trained, but they have that X factor that makes them superheroes. Right. But sometimes you're a poor sap in a bad location, wrong place, wrong time. And as you said, you picked up a gun and you're lucky you're holding it without pointing the muzzle at you. Right. So you want to know, are you capable? Or are you not capable? And then the next thing you want to ask is, how much is emotion kicking in and overcoming your sense of self and thought, right? So again, you might be a capable person who's well-trained, but you're a police officer going in because you think there's some missing kids, and you come in, and not only are you too late and you find them, but they're dead, but you find the guy over them, and you are 100% sure he's the monster. The question is, how do you deal with the violence in that moment?
Laughing Vikings Live. High vibe chats with actors, comedians, and creators, plus stand-up comedy, sketch comedy, and most importantly, you. That's right, join us every Monday for new episodes, and you can be a part of the show on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Twitch. Ask questions and interact in the comments, and make sure to share this with your actor, comedian, and creator friends so they can be a part of the show too. Can't make a live show? No problem. You can catch up on your favorite podcast platform and visit laughingvikings.com to find out how you can join the cast and crew. All right, it's time for today's show. Buckle up and make sure you stick around to the end because we have a special surprise for you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Laughing Vikings Live. Happy Monday Fun Day. Let's go.
And just like clockwork, we are here again 7 days later. Welcome to episode 53. I'm Lars here at Laughing Vikings. We got Brandon Knox, aka the BK Broiler, in the house. Happy to see everyone. Maybe on Facebook. I hear Facebook is down right now. Usually Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. If Facebook is gone today, so be it. And we got a great show planned. Our guest is fantastic. You're going to learn a lot. But first, a little chit-chat banter off the top. BK, how was your weekend?
It was a doozy, Lars. It was it was fun. It was enlightening. I really had a great weekend. Good. Yeah, how was yours?
It was great, except for right here. We're looking good for the Jays. They had a great run the last couple months of the season. I was at the game on Friday with my dad. Great game. They won. What did they win? 6-4, or like they won fairly handily. Got a little close at the end. Then they blew them out on Saturday and on Sunday, but they still ended up losing or not making the playoffs because both Boston and New York won. So their season's over. So I was a little sad, but I'm not really like fiercely passionate sports person where I live and die based on them anyways. It's just kind of like, oh, okay. All right. See them. They'll be fine. They're all millionaires. I'm sure they're going to recover.
You don't want to do a fun rant about it for a couple minutes?
I'm not passionate. And I honestly don't care enough to go deep into it. Like I remember the episode when the Leafs lost in the playoffs and you were ranting and raving. And I was like, man, I really admire this guy's passion. I wish I cared about anything that much. And I certainly don't care about sports that much. When I was a kid, I did. And I maybe would have cried if they lost when I was really young. Mm-hmm. But now it's just like, I mean, I cheer for them. I root for them. Yeah. They do have an incredible team. They got a great young roster of players that are going to be around for a long time. But now it's time for hockey and basketball season, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be great. It's going to be interesting. The Leafs need to win my support back this year, but I'm very excited to see what they do.
That's funny that you say they need to win your support. Like you've finally walked away from an abusive relationship after how many years? You'll be back. You're back. They're not going to have to do anything. Opening day, opening game, you're going to be there just like you've been there every other year when they've lost. So
Yeah, I will. It's a
feel for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really appreciate that.
I mean, I feel for you, but I'm also like, it's that quote about insanity, doing the same things over and over and over again, expecting different results. It's like you sort of are a little bit of a masochist to be a Leafs fan at this point, like a glutton for punishment. There must be something you like about that pain every year. Maybe you're just like, I just like to feel anything.
It reminds me that I'm still alive, Lars.
Right. We also had a fun weekend in Comedy Alley here. We had a couple great shows on Friday and Saturday. And the other thing that I'm continually going to be speaking about over the next few months here is the conservatory that I'm a member of, the Todorov Conservatory. I've got classes Monday through Thursday, doing scene study, film history, theater history, improv, movement, voice and speech, everything that you could possibly learn, really. And that's just super enlightening. They've been so much fun. I feel every day more and more like the artist. I'm just bashing any imposter syndrome that I may have had into the ground and just grinding it to a pulp with these classes. And one of my favorites, and you've sort of been on the sidelines or in the studio here as I've been practicing, is the Shakespeare classes. I've never gone this deep dive with Shakespeare, and I'm learning the King Henry or Henry V Crispin's Day speech. So on the weekend, we were playing basketball, and I like to get the lines and the words into me while I'm moving and doing things physical. So I'm dribbling and taking shots on keywords. And then today in the studio, we're never sure if we're going to be performing or not. He'll call on us somewhat at random. Like, you know, if you went last week, you're probably not going to go again this week. But I was taking a bunch of rips at it today, and it's starting to feel really epic. And that speech to me is the path to a ton of things that I want to achieve in my career, mainly that kind of like kingly epic battle speech. Which maybe we can talk about that kind of stuff because it does relate to our guests that we have on the show today. But that's also the halftime speech in sports. That's the big lawyer speech, the big politician speech. So I feel to be able to learn something that epic and deliver something with that much passion and enthusiasm and gravitas. It's the fate of my country and the fate of my people and family and everyone I know depends on it. So just that huge rousing speech, and I'm really pumped and excited, and it's ignited a new passion for me, and specifically for Shakespeare's words. His words are so fucking good. It's written so well. The rhythm and the musicality of the iambic pentameter is just brilliant. Mm-hmm. And every time I say those words, I feel like it's in a weird way. Sometimes when I'm saying, I feel like I'm like rousing the ghosts of Shakespeare and or people in the past, maybe these kings. Like it really does connect you to a history, and I'll do a run of that speech and I'll be like, holy shit, like where it's almost an out of body experience sometimes. It's just brilliant. I could talk about it. I was just going to say we could do a whole episode on Shakespeare and we will be doing a whole episode on Shakespeare October 25th. With Mary Lou Rosato, who is
we'll be doing two titan. Episodes.
Oh yeah, we're doing a couple. Yeah.
We'll be doing a two-parter of Shakespeare on October 17th and October 18th and October 25th. So stay tuned for that because they will be very exciting.
Second half of October.
Let's get into our guest today. So Lars, you want to roll a clip?
Let's roll a clip, and then we'll give him an intro, and we'll bring him into the studio.
Ready, and...
So, I put powder in, I cocked back. Let's see if we're lucky, all right? And we are very lucky. If you were here right now, all you would smell are bad eggs. Flintlock pistol. Let's see how this one goes. I'm really having a very lucky day. This is fantastic. So, that would work very well in a dueling scene, don't you think? Okay, now to check out this little guy with a very, very small percussion cap. Again, let's see if it goes off. Pretty impressive. It's ridiculously fun. What we do, crazy fun. So this is that French pistol with a much a larger percussion cap. Ready? Almost like a old tiny camera. But it works lovely, and this has been a use in a few shows, and I found it to be very, very useful, even with just the percussion cap. So here's a long gun, right? This is a type of birding musket, hunting musket. Anyways, it's lovely, and let's see how this one works. So we had ignition, but not the powder going. Okay, we'll have to try that again. Second time, we'll see if it's the second time's the charm. Nice. So yeah, there you go.
Yes. All right. I'm so excited to bring our guest on today. He's an actor. He's also co-owner of Rapier Wit Stage and Screen Combat. He's been a fight director on TV, on movies, on Broadway, at the Stratford Festival. And I had the pleasure about 2 years ago, I met him at an event called the Movie Expo, which was created by Taz Garcia, which we had on a couple weeks ago. He did a sort of an intro level instruction on guns and firearms and weapons and film. I loved it so much that I signed up 2 weeks later for his next class. I loved it. You guys are going to love him. Please bring in Daniel Levinson, everybody.
Hey, guys. Great to see you. Thank you so much for having me.
Nice to see you. Yes, great having you. I think out of all of our guests, you have the strongest case of gun fever.
Well, I can tell you just I did that shot because someone wanted me to show some of the black powder stuff for a project coming up, and it seemed like a good excuse to show how they work. And I can still taste the black powder, I swear. It's been months. And I don't know if you noticed, at the end of the video, you started hearing the sound behind. That was me evacuating all the air out of the studio because I had set the alarm off.
Yeah.
The fire alarm. Yeah, it was epic. My neighbors love me.
Yeah, well, we're so pumped to have you here. Again, when I took the class with you and your other instructors, I loved it. I loved your teaching style. You might think that the interesting thing about you is you're so fun and you're so smiley and lovable and likable. You might think that someone dealing with guns and weapons wouldn't be that. So it's a funny juxtaposition of teaching people how to use these weapons of death in TV and film, but all with a smile on your face. So I loved it when you were one of the first people that came to our mind when we were talking about this next season of having some instructors and people come on the show to talk about their specialty. So we're going to talk a lot about your career. We're going to talk a lot about Rapier Wit and the courses that you offer there. But first, this is something that we do every episode. This is a little something, Daniel, called the 1 minute life story. Brandon's going to throw a stopwatch up on the clock here on screen with 60 seconds. And you get 60 seconds to tell our listeners Daniel Levinson's 1 minute life story. Go.
Oh my God. So I got into university by writing a really great script that probably isn't so great now. And it was really exciting. And because of that, I went to York University. And while there, I realized writing is really freaking hard. And I was going to focus on acting to be able to be a better writer. And when I finally graduated in 91, which is probably before most people who are watching this were alive, but it's worth it. Stay in here. It gets there. I decided right then and there to start Rapier Wit. Not because I thought I was going to take over the world, but I just got tired of waiting for the phone to ring. And I thought this way, if I rang my own phone, I'd have someone to talk to, which would be me. And very quickly, I started finding myself doing lots of fight directing. Why? Because people kind of liked how, as you said, I made them feel, and they loved how I was able to tell really great physical stories, and I was able to make them feel comfortable. And really, really important, no one got hurt when I was working with them. And step by step, I finally bit the bullet and got my first studio and then got a larger studio. And now I'm in this really even larger studio and step by step moving towards trying to create a really great environment. And so now I have a community of Rapier Wit, which is very welcoming, very amazing. We do awesome things. Please come.
Boom. Ding, 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 ding. Wow, that was perfect. You might have nailed it right on 1 minute there. That was impressive. That's going to go down in the Laughing Vikings 1 minute life story archives as one of the smoothest.
Fantastic. Nice aim to please.
So good.
I want to say one thing because you're very kind about saying how you enjoyed working with me, and it was a great pleasure working with you as well. I think because we're dealing with really serious issues and often tragic ones. We're talking violence that normally ends in a character's death. And some of them, of course, are not heroic at all. Like, we can deal with violence that is very upsetting because it could be characters who are being abusive, characters who are, sort of nuts and bolts of some of our really tragic material. And so I think it's important to go in with a healthy sense of who we are and being able to find joy in being partnering and working with people, rather than, I think, taking ourselves too seriously, because the work is serious. And this way, you get the best of both worlds, and it's not as draining. The idea is not to go home at the end of the day unable to function because it's been so heavy. So again, also talking about your wonderful take on Shakespeare, you have to also be able to get out of it and allow yourself breath. Because if you lived in the epic all the time, you would eat yourself up, right? You'd burn yourself up, you know? So it's really finding a good balance in enjoyment and love of the other and working with each other. And at the same time, as you saw, being very serious in creating excellent work at the same time.
Right. And as a person who, throughout my life, I did grow up in the country. So there was hunters around me and people with rifles and things like that. I never had one. I've never gone hunting. So I had zero. I had never held like BB guns was the most of my experience. So I wasn't a person who's comfortable with weapons per se before, or like really even chomping at the bit. There was definitely some fear there. And I felt super safe and felt in good hands and never felt that I was going to go to a weekend workshop and end up getting shot in my own eye from myself or someone else. So,
right.
Yeah, it was great. It was an all around amazing experience. So we want to take it back in time a little bit before Rapier Wit. How did you first get into performing, or do you remember as a young boy or as a child, what was your very first performance?
Oh man. I was acting as a kid, you know, like summer camp acting and during school acting, and nothing jumps out that is like epically amazing, but I clearly liked it. Near the end of high school, I did a ton of improv. And at the time there was a new thing called the Improv Olympics, which of course is now doing very well and is expanded. But I was one of the first of the groups that were doing it. And that went on to creating a couple of shows with those people. It's interesting. I really thought I was going to be an actor because I love acting and I loved the cause of it. But the business of acting strangely got in the way of the other things I really loved, which was the directing, the fight directing, the writing. And I had to make a choice, basically. So that's where, though I still think of myself as an actor and occasionally get asked to act, finding myself much more being mentoring people, fight directing, and of course teaching. So it's really odd, and people often ask about that moment, and I think it was more evolutionary, you know, that sort of movement through time and recognizing opportunities, taking them when they come up, and also some hard, you know, let's call it walks in the snow, like I said, realizing that a decision you had to make. You can't be everything, and to get very, very good at something, you need to commit, I think. This is awful to say that, because like obviously this is a channel for people to learn about everything. And I hate to make people think they have to give up their passions. I just mean that for me to find the place where I am now, I had to really focus, I think, on the fight directing and the instructing.
Right. You mentioned too, the acting side of things. I did find in your workshops at Rapier Wit that was really well addressed. Like that it wasn't just the technical of like how to hold a gun or the action of a gun. There was a lot of, I guess you'd say, like sort of scene study-ish type things, especially body language. Like for an example is if your character is just a civilian and they found a gun and now they're defending themselves, they're going to carry themselves and hold that gun much different than someone who's a trained CIA operative and has been through government and army training and all that kind of thing. So the expertise, how you hold things, how you carry yourself, are you confident with that? Those are all actor choices too. And I felt that you guys really addressed that. And it did feel like sort of a hybrid of scene study and or character choices, plus the equipment and the weapons being in there too. So I do feel you addressed that as well. It's great.
Well, I'm thrilled you said that, because that is really everything we're about. And I should say, just in case people think we only do guns, we do tons of sword, lots of unarmed. We're structured and set up to help people really work on what it is to be a character who's physical in distress. Like, usually you can imagine, like, violence is usually the ultimate in conflict. Of course, all good drama is conflict, so we just basically go right to it. And the idea that I really think is important, I was going to talk about later, but I might as well sort of start it here, is we train so hard to get very good at skills. And what I find most interesting when I'm building my scenes with my actors as characters is you have all of these hours of training in the body that go to shit once your character gets emotional. And it's super interesting watching these finely tuned fighters start making what I call intelligent mistakes, as opposed to they're fighting all of a sudden one sort of has a heart attack and drops dead. Like, doesn't make any sense why the fight alters and one character loses because they're so perfectly matched. And it's just sort of the director decided that person had to die at that point. I want the audience to be there step by step, following the story, feeling for the characters. And then, going, oh, this guy's screwed. Oh. And you can see the character making the emotional or mental mistakes or pulling it out. That ridiculous, not to talk about sports, but that ridiculous belief that we have in the Leafs ever going to win. That you know, you still have this sort of feeling, right? Maybe this is their year, even though, the guy's had all those wounds. Sorry, man. I just thought I'd point that out. But you know what I mean? And so the irony is, learning the skills is physically taxing and mechanically challenging. But I would suggest what makes it really amazing to watch our actors is the emotional content. The emotional content with the audience. You were talking about with Shakespeare and how you have this incredible emotional rush when you're doing it. What do you think you're getting back from the audience as you're feeding them, right? And you also really need to play these characters that are fundamentally different from the beginning of the scene to the end, particularly when the climax means either A, you've taken a life and you may not feel good about that, right? You might be a character who is actually horrified that they've done that ultimate bit of violence, or they might feel vindicated. Or of course, you're the other side of it where you're bleeding out and you realize everything, your whole life was pointless as you die to this SOB, right? So there's some things that I think are so worth functioning, discovering and the function of what it is to be these people. And then I've noticed that the people we work with are phenomenally excellent in scenes where there's no violence, because you can feel the potential in them of the capability of violence as the character, or you can see that their choices are stronger because they've already made other choices in other scenes that allow them to go further than if they had only done standing and speaking scene study. Right. So we find this super useful to motivate and activate other parts of our creative soul. And so I do think of myself as an acting teacher, as well as a fight instructor, as well as a technique teacher. And it's really great because I've surrounded myself with really phenomenal people who are all different or unique in their approach and yet feel likewise in what I'm saying. So we have a very deep and very rich environment, regardless of who you get to teach, work with as a teacher.
Love it. Yeah, we're only a few minutes in and there's already just pearls of wisdom and just spitting fire here. Let's take it back to you. Do you remember your very first paid professional gig, whether that was as an actor or as a fight coordinator? Or
so there's two that jump to mind. One, it must have been later because it was around Christmas and it was at Casa Loma and it was one of the first Christmas shows. And it's super interesting to perform with people right there. And it was a year that everyone got sick, so I didn't, and I kept finding myself in cast and being begged to come in on days off. So I had way too many times in. And the show went past Christmas and we were doing a Christmas carol. So it was Christmas over and you're kind of like, why are we still doing this, right? And if you've ever been in Casa Loma, at the end of the evenings, it's always a bit creepy. Like, the guests are finally gone and you're still paid to be there and you're wandering around in these empty rooms, you know? And so I actually discovered a lot about interaction with people, even though I'd done improv before. They weren't like in your lap, as it were. and really working with people dealing with what it is to be in that time pressure. Do you know what I mean? It was so that there was that job. And another one, ironically, my wife, who wasn't at the time, Kirsten and I were working for a company doing things about the environment. And at the time, AIDS was a huge issue. And we were doing shows about the AIDS epidemic and doing shows about how to better our lives in environmentally, but also like how the structures of cities work. And we would go to high schools and younger schools and do those, traveling around Ontario. And that was also, again, very interesting, dealing with material that was super important and really, really serious. But how do you get it across without making people fall asleep, you know? And how do you do it without losing your will to live, because it's really bleak? You know, like the stuff we were talking about was super serious. And the irony actually is, way back then, talking about the danger of epidemics and the threats that we would need to address. Good thing we listened. Anyway, you know that thing. So those were examples of some of the earlier shows. And then I did a ton of Shakespeare. No surprise, I was brought out to do the fights. And then, hey, it's cheap and he's here and he fits the suit. Let's put him in the show too. You know, so I was doing Shakespeare. And when I was younger as a fight director, I thought more was more instead of less is more. So we had these ridiculously long fights. And I'm like, looking back now, and I'm you know, I'm surprised the audience didn't fall asleep because, you know, hours of violence. Better to do really timely, smart, specific, short violent scenes rather than the ones that go on and on that make you feel good about yourself.
Gotcha. Note to self. Yes.
Yeah. Less is more.
We want to start talking a little bit more about the origins of Rapier Wit. Brandon, mm-hmm. I think, is going to show a little promo video here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, great.
Roll the clip.
Rolling the clip.
I believe that as an actor, you need to have a lot of skills. And I think stage combat has made me an asset to every show I've worked on. I've been coming to Rapier Wit since I was 16 years old.
I have never been to a place that I could come into and swing swords around with 10 other people swinging swords around.
I'm originally from Oklahoma City, and I came to Rapier Wit to continue my training in stage combat.
I was looking for training that would challenge me, and I'm originally from New York City.
After getting a taste of stage combat, I wanted to do more.
When we first started, if you weren't in school, in a university or college, and were lucky enough to have someone teaching, there was really no place for you to go to be trained.
Rapier Wit is definitely a name that people recognize.
As far as I know, it's the only continuous stage combat studio in Canada. It's a place where you can come 365 days of the year and find a class.
We train actor combatants through Basic, Intermediate, Advanced to get their certifications with FBC. We train in all sorts of fight forms. Unarmed, single sword, quarter staff, rapier and dagger, and broadsword, small sword, Eastern unarmed martial arts weapons. Every Monday we have somebody new come in and do something that you normally can't get to train in. I have people coming here who are doing dance, circus.
It really is a safe place to come and to train, and a fun place to come and train.
The armory is also incredible.
You walk into this armory and it's a whole new world.
We get to just come in and pick a weapon and say, teach me this.
You're never a stranger after you walk through the door. That sense of community makes it less of a club and more of a family. Yeah.
You can't get students to leave.
I come here, and this is kind of like my second living room.
I definitely want to keep coming back and coming back. And not going to leave.
I never drag my feet going to a class. It's always really fun, and the people make it fun.
It's a place where people come, where everyone grows.
I don't think there's anyone at Rapier Wit who lets their art stagnate.
It makes me want to constantly improve myself, because they're already so amazing, and they're still trying to improve themselves.
I don't think a place like Rapier Wit exists anywhere else in Canada.
They're not only stunt people. They're instructors and they're actors.
It helped me relate to acting in a physical way, and that, I think, deepened my understanding of acting and my love for it.
They know what an actor needs to hear, and they know how a director needs to get across to an actor.
You don't actually have to be a performer to come here. We've had lawyers, doctors, people who just want to do something they've always wanted, which is swashbuckle. And here's a place to come, and you get to play and be that kid.
It is the perfect job for me, and I wouldn't have found it had I not found Rapier Wit. It's given me so much.
So if you want to come somewhere and train with the best and do things that you probably didn't think you could do before,
I think Rapier Wit's the place.
Swashbuck?
Yes.
It's a fantastic word.
It's not, not a fantastic word. I have to say, watching that makes me even sadder about the loss we've had over COVID. So this is the longest period of time we haven't had stuff happening 6, if not 7 days a week. And we're not open yet, I'll fully admit, because you can see how close we are physically in doing things. And it's all well and good that I'm willing to wear a mask, and I think everyone would, but we're still, I think, trying to navigate what COVID means for us to do these scenes and this work. It's immensely physical, and I have worked in a mask physically, and it's a challenge in a way that I'm not saying you can't breathe in a mask, but emotionally, it feels harder than you would normally, you know what I mean, if you're wearing just a medical mask. And finally, our rules are very simple. There's 3 rules for stage combat: safety, story, style. And what that means is safety. If you harm someone or harm yourself, you can't continue. So that's a no-brainer. And story is because there's no point in doing something that doesn't engage the audience emotionally and mentally. And so there's the story, and it has to be between you and your partners and you and the audience. And style is the question of how we tell that story. But the first one was safety. And if we're not creating and maintaining a place where people can come and do what they do safely, which includes not getting COVID, then obviously I'm going against the entire center of our core, right? And that's one of the reasons why we haven't opened yet. And we tried doing some Zoom work, and I had taught some Zoom classes. But again, and more power to everyone who can do Zoom, fantastic. And I'm really happy for you, and go keep doing it. But I know what makes us... I think special, or what really gives people the sense of the personal, is being in the room and allowing that engagement on that level. And I'm willing to hold for a bit longer, right, to allow that to happen. And that's where we're at right now. And so the good news, and I can promise this, the Wit's not going anywhere. So I'm not going to lose Rapier Wit. We're not closing. But we're just in a hiatus, and it's given me a lot of time to think about what's important to me about my art and art in general. So I think when I come back, I hope I'll be even stronger. And also, you'll notice how young and less gray I was in that video.
Well, I'm sure that your community of actors here in Toronto and elsewhere are all chomping at the bit. So the second that you are open, I'm sure things will be booming for you. And you're right. If you are so big on safety, it would be sort of antithetical for you to then be like, okay, yeah, be safe with guns and be safe with swords, but come on in with your viruses and let's figure it out. So kudos to you for having the discipline to keep that. I know it's probably been tough potentially financially, and more so just emotionally, to not get to do the thing that you love every day after doing it for so long. So I also wanted to show you here, this is my diploma here. First of hopefully many when you get reopened. I'm sure I can add more to my resume.
And our new ones were even nicer. So Kirsten made an even nicer one that you'll like.
Right.
Yeah.
Beauty. Yeah. And this one was the stage and screen firearm safety workshop that we did over 2 weekends. That then also allows you to with the government apply to actually own
a possession gun. Acquisition license. That's right.
Right. Yeah. Which is what the PAL stands for, Possession and Acquisitions License. Although I must admit, it's been 2 years now, and not having used it, I definitely have to go back through my notes and refresh some of my my memory of safety. But even
just the being self-serving and sounding like I'm drumming up yet more business. When we come back, one of the things we do is classes for people who've already done it to renew and revitalize your training. Because let's face it, actors have to start thinking like dancers, musicians, and other artists who, you know, they practice their trade and their art every day. And so musicians with their scales and dancers back at the bar if they're doing ballet. And I think one of the things that we as actors sometimes get trapped in is, we'll call it the 9 to 5 of our lives, right? And, you know, and the person's working double shifts at the bar. Now I'm ready to play Hamlet. And you're like, you know, so we have purposely created things for you for that. You know, you've already done it. We're not denying what you've already put effort into. We're allowing you to recapture it. Because let's face it, you will also be a different person when you come back. So you'll be learning new things because of your new perspective.
Right. Yeah. And I definitely need it. I mean, again, if knowledge is great, but unless you're using it on a regular basis, you do lose it. And I love what you said about actors. And one of our coaches, Tom Todoroff, at the conservatory, and Brandon's a member of their weekly classes as well. He talks about the same thing, where like a musician, a violinist is playing scales every day, so that if someone goes down in an orchestra, they just step in, they can sight read, and then they're good to go. They're not rusty. And a lot of the times, actors, if they haven't been getting an audition or they're not currently in a show or in a play, you get rusty. It's your body, it's your vocal apparatus, and you got to keep that going. So he really preaches to us, you need to be daily either reading aloud or practicing monologues and rehearsing monologues at like minimum 15 minutes, or have an array of 6 different monologues that you sort of have in your back pocket, so that when you get the audition, that can be a life changer and a game changer and potentially could be 5 figures, 6 figures, 7 figures and sends you off to the races. You can't expect your body and your voice and your instrument to instantly activate if you haven't been doing that on a daily basis. So I love that you reiterate that, so just the importance.
If I could add one more thing, I think it really goes with that. And what, you know, is, and remember that truly being alone, like doing, let's say, a one man show, a one person show, or a monologue, is not actually the common reality of most performance. Most performance is engaging with a second, third character, and most importantly, with an audience. And I think the speaking out loud gets you comfortable allowing your voice to be heard, allowing you sharing that energy. There's the other half you need to work on too, which is one of the reasons why I believe so much in partnering exercises and having other people in the room watching you, right? So when you're training in fights, we then get to watch each other and in a very constructive and positive and kind way, we make suggestions to make things even better and things that we thought was an improvement and things that we liked and where areas might need to be addressed. Not about shitting on people and making them feel bad, but really talking about where they can go next with it. And the reason why I say that is, everything we do is partnering, right? We're partnering with our audience. We're partnering with our physical partners on the stage. So what you said, I think, is 100% true. And then the next level is to remember that what we do always involves the other. So it's one of the reasons why I think acting is one of the most empathetic and compassionate of the arts, because of our absolute need for that, where writers and painters can create and then hand the art off and never interact with their audience. And that's just something we're not capable of doing. And even where people create film or recorded medium where you don't have the immediate return of the audience, it's still, you're performing still because you know when watched, the audience is actually reacting as if they were in the room with you. So this is all right. Stuff that I think is super important for us to engage in.
That's a great point. Brandon, you had a couple questions as well.
Dan, how was Rapier Wit founded? I know we talked about it a little bit off the top, but I would love to hear more.
When I was doing the whole, yeah.
Yeah.
So I have to be absolutely upfront and frank and say I had no idea my life would lead me here, right? I graduated out of York University and thought I'd be an actor. And as I said, I got in writing and I've always been writing on the side. And the writing actually now is being used in my classes and being given to other performers to use in their performances. And so I'm very lucky with that. But I started Rapier Wit thinking I was going to do improv, some acting, and I liked fighting, and I thought it was fun, and it'd be easy, and try to do something. And I really wanted to create my own work. And we're talking school and church basements, any corner I could find. And bit by bit, I was realizing that people liked what I was doing, and Rapier Wit was moving from about being Daniel to being much more about other people. And in, I want to say 94, I decided to bite the bullet. No, 96, to bite the bullet and get my first studio. And it was hardly that. It was like 500 square feet, and I lived in it too. Like, as you turn around and bump your head on your own shadow kind of thing, right? But it was a start, and those were my first classes. And I learned about many things, and at risk of sounding like a jerk, I went back to all the experiences I had as a student and started doing a lot of stuff that I wished people had done for me, right? Or with me. And I think I came out of a time and an art style where you were supposed to know something. If you didn't know it already, then like, what the hell's wrong with you? We're here to teach you some skills and some tricks, but like, you either are or aren't, whatever that means. And I was very frustrated by that because I wanted to improve, and I didn't want to hate myself every fucking day of my life, right? And at the time, and I think a lot of people might agree that when you were in theater school, it was pretty brutal for that period. And I'm hoping it's better now. I was teaching in university from 94 up to just before COVID. And again, because I wasn't really interested in doing Zoom, and they weren't sure what to do with stage combat in the schools. And also I realized it was time for me to step back and let some of my younger peers get chances to be in the universities, because I was going to focus on the wit and I'm mentoring numerous artists around the country and actually in North America. And I thought, you know what, I'm doing a lot. Let's give some of this work away. And it was really helpful to catch this breather, right? And step by step, as I said, I grew from this ridiculous closet to a less ridiculous closet to this place now that I think I'm pretty proud of. When I get complaints about the wit, it's always like, we wish the space was bigger. And I'm like, I wish I had a pony, right? we have 1,500 square feet. It's super hard to get anything, right, in this city with no pillars, you know what I mean? And we have a sprung floor, and, you know, like, I'm really happy with the wit. So when people say that to me, I just kind of want to, you know, sulk, you know, because I would love to have 3,000 square feet, you know, what can I tell you? But it's super hard to do that. And also, once I started building up my spaces, I quickly realized doing it by myself was less of a way to really grow and to succeed than bringing people along and with me. So now there's about 12 instructors, depending on who's in town, because people, they all work on their own projects and are all successful in their own right. But this way I can really have a number of people join me in teaching. And so, for instance, a large part of Rapier Wit is part of Fight Directors Canada, which is Canada's only internationally recognized nationwide association of stage combat artists. And there are other people who do it, and I don't want to make it sound like you can't work with them, by all means, but we're just a group and that have people from coast to coast. And I love the fact that we can have people come and join us from all over. And what this means is we have certification classes. There's basic and intermediate and advanced within Fight Directors Canada, because there's just so much to learn, and it allows us to then really focus. And we believe in a holistic view of learning things. So basic has three disciplines, and intermediate has four, and advanced has five. So you constantly are adding not just technique and new skills and new demands of unique weapons, but also growth in demands on the person, right? And because of that, and we've worked with international people really like Fight Directors Canada, really like the artists that we're helping promote and create, because they seem very well-rounded and they have huge skill sets. And so because of that, and I'm really lucky, I get to teach everything in all the disciplines, but I want to share that. And so if I'm doing basic, you know, I'll bring in a couple extra teachers. So it's the three teachers rather than just me doing it by myself in intermediate and advanced. And it's awesome because then I get to sit and watch them teach. They get to watch me. And we also share on ideas with directing and storytelling. And because of that, I think that the WIT is very much an incubator for artists. And I have, as in the video says, I have dancers coming here, stunt people. I had a person who was a visual artist, and all he wanted to do was come and sketch our people in movement, you know, and those things became their, I don't know if they got their PhD, but their master's degree was like this art that they created from that. And I think just to come down, I guess, to the point of what all this is about is that belief it takes a village to raise a child. Well, kind of think it takes a village to create an artist, and it takes a village of artists to create great art. And every time I think I really know something, someone shows up and shows me something even better. And I'm really proud that this is a place where people share rather than feel a need to push people out and only maintain their small little part. And as I'm watching other people grow and move on to huge parts of their career, I'm so much happier than I would have been when I was younger, when I suffered from, let's say, envy and frustration that I wasn't as successful as everyone else, when you realize you're not everyone else. And it's a ridiculous experience to waste that energy when you, in fact, have numerous things that are working for you. And I understand there's frustration and difficulty in all of our lives as we're trying to maintain ourselves through, let's say, COVID or just our careers. But you have to find places that nourish you and give you this sense that you are worthy and you are creating art and you can share your art with others. And that's what the WIT's about.
Love it. Love it. That really resonates with me too, Daniel, here at Laughing Vikings. I can speak to that in the last 5 years since having this community here and having a space and having actors come through, like a ton of the best things that have ever happened to me in my life and in career have been spawned from having a community. And then initially it was just me running the studio, running audition sessions and self-tapes and renting out the studio. And now we've got a small team of people, and it's way more fun. It's just great as far as networking and building new relationships. And I think that's a big thing in the acting world as well, too, is it can feel very lone wolf, especially and also in the stand-up community. You kind of feel like it's just you against the world. But we've all had experiences where you're in a brilliant cast or you're in some kind of ensemble of performance. And it feels like it really does feel like family. In that promo video, someone mentioned family, and it's like the family that fights with swords and guns stays together, you know. I love that. I just want to speak briefly, and Brandon maybe has a little anecdote to tell, how important, like, what the challenge of what you have to do in TV and film and on stage, especially in stage, because people are right there, there's no camera tricks or CGI or weird cuts or camera angles, is how to make something so epic and violent and scary, what's scary in real life, come across as real to the viewer without putting the performers really at risk. And that done wrong, whether it's a small indie production or on a Hollywood level, we've all seen stories of stunt men dying or people dying from whether it's a weapon or like a gun or a sword or big falls or car crashes. It happens quite a bit. So there's a huge importance to it. And Brandon, I know you had a story from sort of indie film days that you wanted to share.
Yeah, I was doing a sketch a long time ago, I think before COVID.
Four times.
Yeah, we had a fake gun on a roof that was a water gun. And it looked fairly real, and we were yelling and screaming and doing our thing, but we didn't let anyone in the building know that we were there. We only had a connection with two people that lived in the building and didn't let anyone else in the building know. And as we were leaving, I saw a police officer on like an opposite building balcony, and I laughed because I was like, yeah, that's what our scene's about, a police officer looking down on people, that's funny. And then as soon as we rounded the corner, the SWAT team came out, and on all sides we were down on the ground, and honestly, if we had let people know, if we had let the police know, like all of that would have been avoided. And it was luckily just a rehearsal, but it could have been a lot worse. And I from then, I have been very open about how I feel about gun safety. And I don't even believe that you should just randomly have a gun in a bag while doing a monologue and then bring it out and wave it about to get more of an effect. I just don't believe that is something that we should do as actors, because we don't know what trigger warning anyone could have. And like, that wasn't my first run in with a gun, but like, it could have ended a lot worse than it did.
Yeah. So using the last thing you talked about, like pulling the gun out, when an audience, we'll stay with theater for a minute. When an audience comes in, there's a contract, an agreement that they're willing to observe and watch. We even put, you know, warning gunshots if there's actually a gunshot, right? But they know they're here to participate. And obviously film, it's already removed more because it's recorded. But that sense that the reason why I say this contract is strangers in the street have no contract with you, right? And so the story you told, I know many stories like that. And I share them in our PAL classes that Lars will remember some of them. The number of people who, through very, very much, let's call it good training on the police part or good luck, because I think right now there's our belief right now is that, especially because we're getting a lot of material from the States, that the police are vindictive and violent and would shoot you for no reason. I'm hoping that's not the case in Canada, because I know too many stories where not only did the people not get shot, they were even let off with a warning rather than thinking of some of the things that could have happened with someone else being frightened by seeing a gun. You were talking about someone being triggered by seeing it. If someone had suffered violence and saw you, what looked like you were about to kill someone with a gun, I mean, who knows what you could do in forcing them to a place where they don't want to be. And so we have huge responsibilities as performers, as artists. And I'm a big, big fan, obviously, of taking strong story risks with violence. Like, I think you're allowed to play monstrous people who do monstrous things. I think you're allowed to make really, really challenging choices that make the audience uncomfortable, but they know their audience, right? When you're just doing something because you're either, and I don't mean to be insulting, but you're too lazy, you're too cheap, you don't have the patience to look on how to do it properly. As you said, hiring a police officer, like if you're doing a film, you're supposed to, you know, go to the city and get permits. The guerrilla filmmaking, you know, and almost everyone does it at the beginning of their career. But there's horrible ramifications that might occur. There was an actor in New York who, because he had previous criminal charges, is looking at a really long jail time because he had a replica firearm and was arrested in what looked like a bank robbery. Now, very quickly, it turned out it was a film, but he's not getting off on this, right? Like they were, last I heard, they're still taking him to court. And so I don't think it's hard to get what you want. What I mean by that is you put in the time, you find the financial and other resources and do it correctly. And I bet you'll even get better art rather than looking over your shoulder and trying to get it filmed very quickly and running through alleys in Toronto and hope nobody catches you. The other thing about it is what we put out, we get back. And so when we put out professional, empathetic, kind, intelligent, and giving energy in our work and our behavior and our professional interactions, I do believe we get it back. I know that everyone has stories about working with that one person who's just a complete pain and is awful. But honestly, they're not the majority for me, right? And I think with something so important, which is your life, you know, you really need to take tremendous responsibility with such things, right? And I have stunt friends who they're exceptional performers, but all of them have had an injury they probably shouldn't have had, right? And to a person, when they tell me about these stories, it's like, I wasn't thinking, right? I was too tired that day, or I wanted to show off, or I needed to do it. They told me I needed to do it. And you're, not so much. And so I'd be the last person to tell you, no, never use guns or never use swords or never do stage combat, because clearly, or violence, because it's what we do. But like I said, you can get everything you want. You can get your cake and eat it too, if you simply take the time, you do the training, you do it properly. Because that's the other thing, right? The danger I'm going to suggest is far beyond ours. If enough bad events occur, they'll pass more laws, right? Making it even harder for us to do things that we think we want to do for film. So for instance, where the prohibited replica firearm, that whole thing came out because people were doing two really stupid things. One, they were buying these replica firearms and apparently attempting to make them into real firearms, because of course you didn't need a license for them, which is insane and would probably blow up your hand and cause like death. So already it was crazy. But these are people who probably had little care, right? But there were other people who talking about that guerrilla filming, and they were buying these rather inexpensive, prop starter pistols that look like real guns, and we're using them. And the police went to basically, it was the federal government, and they basically said that our officers are endangered with these things, or people are endangered, and we will shoot them thinking it's real firearms. We need to do something about that. And all of a sudden, all these things that used to be easy to get are now prohibited replica firearms, even whether they work or not, whether they make a blank off, whether made out of rubber or aluminum, plastic or wood. If it looks real enough, then the danger to you as an individual would be perhaps being shot by a police officer for fear that you have a dangerous weapon. And we do live in a culture where, let's face it, we don't all carry guns all the time, where you can see certain places in the United States where people are carrying into restaurants and things. When someone sees a gun in Toronto, they panic. And probably rightly so, because it's never up for a good reason. So I think your comment about you could have done it a different way, yeah. And the other thing I want to point out is when I started, you knew when someone's filming because cameras were like the size of a fairly hefty child, and they had all the weights on their hips from the batteries. Now cameras are, people are filming. And so people will see what they see. They don't think you're filming. They think that you're about to commit a crime, and they may be the victim. So when I hear people like, can you believe it? They called the police. Yeah, I totally believe they called the police. Yeah. They're probably smart to call the police, right? So that story really hits me because I've heard it shockingly similar numerous times. I even know one very similar where the police jumped them while they're on the roof, pressed them into the hot tar. So one guy got 3-degree burns on his chest.
Yeah, my friends also what to do got, them. I got burns as well on mine.
Oh my God. I'm wondering if you're the story.
We might be talking about the same story.
Yeah,
I think we might.
Yeah, but oh my God, and I won't go into it because it takes too long. But
yeah,
but there's a guy who a very good actor who was acting here in Toronto, was working on a show, got into terrible, terrible trouble over a prop gun that was like just a cap gun, and then he was working out west, and someone told him this story about this idiot who with this cap gun who got into trouble with the cop, and he comes back to Toronto and calls me and says, Daniel, I'm a story now. And if it was later in time, I'd tell him he was a meme, right? He was a meme. But anyway. Yeah. So there you go on that. Like, I think you're totally right. But I also want to reassure people who want to say, oh, but that means I can't do what I want. You can. Mm-hmm. You just need to take the time and make sure you have the proper things in order.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Proper training so that you don't become a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Yes. You've answered so much and you've talked a lot about Rapier Wit, but is there anything else that when you guys do reopen, can you just tell us what prospective students and actors can expect or know about before joining?
So the goal is, I think we're probably going to do what we call like a soft or a smaller opening and then go into our full-blown everything when we know we can. But as I said, the things that the Wit are most known for, where people come to us, is the certification classes people love, because it's this wonderful personal challenge. And as I said, a real growth in you as an actor and doing everything with all this physical stuff and the storytelling and the characters. But also, as you know, I have the firearm classes where there's the PAL, but there's also a movement one where you're not firing guns, but you're dressed up in tactical and you're moving with partners and how to carry a gun and how to move where you feel confident and empowered, how to transition from your long gun to your sidearm and back to the long gun. And then the other stuff, it's like, so someone has a long gun that you think you would like and they won't give you. So you learn how to throw them around and take the gun from them. So that each of these are growths in what you learn, like how to move, and then you learn the next action, and then you learn how to interact with people, right? And we're going to be, of course, reintroducing all these different sword classes, classes for people who've done things before and need to reintroduce themselves to the art and the skills, and classes for people who are novice and never done a thing. So we go from the absolute babe in arms, brand new, well into the grizzled old master who just needs to keep him moving and his skills alive, right? And other than that, I mean, we have Fighting for Film that is very popular. I got to tell you, though, I'm super excited about the future. I just don't know what it looks like yet, right? You know, and we have classes in evening, classes on weekends, and then even classes during the week, because it fits someone's schedule somewhere. That's the goal. Oh, and the other thing that you really like to do is with the longer stuff, like the certifications that are intensive, where people are working with us for 2, 3, 4 weeks, 8-hour days. We do give days off because we're not monsters. You'll work with people from all across North America. We have people coming in from the UK. I've had people from Australia and it's just really exciting working with people from all over the world as well. And it's very humbling to know people have decided to join us from other places, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You mentioned, obviously, the future is uncertain, a little more uncertain now than normal times, although it's kind of always uncertain. We never know what's going to happen. But we always like to know of our guests here, is there a dream project that you aspire to create and or to be a part of, some kind of bucket list thing that you've got in the back of your mind when things change? Because the one interesting thing throughout is, while Rapier Wits has had to shutter basically through all this, you've still been working on TV and film productions because that's they've right. been able to continue to produce things. So can you speak
to... Yeah, so I was really lucky. I did some firearm training on Titans and they were amazing. So I was working with some of the leads and their stunt doubles. And these were really great, great, great people to work with. I'm doing firearms as we speak, not literally as we speak, but I'm helping some friends on a film out of Toronto where I'm doing firearms for that. And I directed a play that was live, just like this venue, that was really neat at the top of the season. And I had also had done fight direction that way too. But honestly, I have two companies I like working with that are really exceptional. One's in Vancouver as a Fair of Honor. And those are my friends, Jackie and Nathania. And if they watch this, they won't see this. But if they do, they're amazing. And Colleen Snell in Toronto has, and Mississauga, I should say, Frog in Hand. And I want to bring these three people together, their companies together. I've written a really epic show about a highly competent, brilliant team that are tactical. These three women who are forced to go into this micro universe and fight for their lives to save people. So the reason why I want to do it live is because, oh yeah, they can do this in film, but the idea of doing it live is super exciting. So think of it as an epic, super violent, adventure that is horror driven but funny.
Love it.
That's so I've written it, and we're just now working on rewrites and figuring out how to get the funding for it and stuff like that. So that's in the back pocket.
Amazing. Congrats. That sounds super cool.
I hope so. You know, every time I think I'm done, I go back and go, oh, and I have to go back and rewrite parts. You know how it is.
Right. And just as a quick teaser, is there anything that, like, as a quick tip or hack or, and again, I know I don't want to skirt your training as far as
oh, no, I get
the proper process, yeah. But is there anything quickly that you would want to share and or could teach to anyone watching at home, whether it's relating to guns or any other weapons?
But let's just talk about your character, right? I think the first thing you want to ask your character is, are they capable or are they not capable in the physical thing that's demanded of them? Right. Hmm. So in the example of the Titans characters, they're hyper, like they're hyper capable. They're not only highly trained, but they have that X factor that makes them superheroes. Right. But sometimes you're a poor sap in a bad location, wrong place, wrong time. And as you said, you picked up a gun and you're lucky you're holding it without pointing the muzzle at you. Right. So you want to know, are you capable? Or are you not capable? And then the next thing you want to ask is, how much is emotion kicking in and overcoming your sense of self and thought, right? So again, you might be a capable person who's well-trained, but you're a police officer going in because you think there's some missing kids, and you come in, and not only are you too late and you find them, but they're dead. But you find the guy over them, and you are 100% sure he's the monster. The question is, how do you deal with the violence in that moment? Versus you walk in and there's the same story. You're the police officer. You think they're you walk in and there's the kid and she looks scared and frightened. And you think, don't worry, I'm going to save you. And as you go towards her, she comes out with this knife and comes at you. Right. Or she simply points behind you and you turn around and there's that guy. You know, where does the violence occur in these events in you? You know, and I guess the last thing is, after everything is said and done and you survive, how do you feel about it? So I think, and this isn't a huge criticism because obviously I love lots of like hyper adventure, crazy over the top Avenger-esque movies, right? But thinking about you're a real person, a normal person, and you have now permanently altered who you are by putting blood on your hands. What does that mean? How are you going to go home for the rest of your life to your family, right? Or the opposite. There's blood on your hands and son of a bitch, I really like it. Like my whole life, I've said yes to people and done things I didn't want to do. And I suddenly discovered what I really like. And apparently what I really like is hurting people. This makes for a very different story and a different character event than the person who's simply neutral at the end of doing something. And I would suggest we're never neutral, right? So you were talking about Henry, right? And I mean, think of those events that Henry lives in this play, or earlier when he fights Hotspur. I mean, yeah, he wins. He's now going to be, you know, he's gotten all of his honors by killing this guy. But how does he really feel about it? And the other thing you want to ask yourself is, when you're that character, is this the first person you've killed? And did it feel like the way it was going to feel? Because we all have all these intellectual moments of you're standing over the icy pool and you're about to jump in and you land in the pool. Does it really feel? Was it as bad as you thought it was? Was it worse than you thought it was? You know, and these questions you ask yourself make for far superior character story event interactions with your audience than simply being neutral and turning off. And I think what gets you as an actor hired again and again is not if you feel things, it's that you get the audience to feel things. Hmm. Right? That's the gift we give. So I'm not, this sounds mean. I'm not really interested how you actually feel. I don't want you to really want to kill your partner, but man, do I want that audience to feel something about you killing that other partner, that character.
Right.
Don't kill your partner. Cause then you're, man, that's got to be manslaughter or something.
Yeah, you probably won't work again.
Yeah, it's like, I'm tired of cleaning up after these people. Yeah, no, that's terrible.
We need to get a new understudy in here every week.
That's right. You know, thank God there's a nice place for burial just outside of town.
I love what, Daniel, what you said about how do you feel after? How do you feel before? How do you feel after? And I especially love when I hear parallels or synchronicities between instructors and one of our acting coaches. Again, I'll mention him, Tom Todoroff. One of the things he often says to us is, how do you feel about everything? Every time you mention someone's name, how do you feel about her? How do you feel about him? You mention a place. You mention a food.
Yeah.
So getting that, like, you're never neutral about everything, you about anything. You have an opinion on everything. So it's, let us know how you feel. Let the audience know how you feel. And that will really color and layer in just a next level performance versus someone who just whitewashes everything with kind of the same energy. That's great. Great advice.
Like people feel safe when they do that, but they're not doing themselves a service at all. And we often talk about, right? Like your character's always doing firsts. This is the first time I kissed. This is the first time I felt love. This is the first time I felt truly fearful, you know? And that's playable. But if it's the 100th time or the 1,000th time, it's harder. And I would suggest another thing, actually a really important thing, is when you're playing a character that has in fact suffered numerous things, like you're in an abusive relationship and your character has been hit clearly numerous times before, but this time is the first of something because we're watching it. Is it the first time you suddenly stand up? Or is it the first time you realize this is your future if you don't change? But something is always the first. And when you find it, you can act it over and over again. I find that actors who've been blessed with long runs of theater we've had talks about, different actors have talked with me, and it's, how do you keep it alive? How do you constantly find it new? And there was an actor who had a really legitimate complaint. She was directed by a director who wanted her to use a traumatic real event to play. And the problem was it disappeared. And this very important event in her life suddenly was numb. And I think that's a crime, you know? Use your imagination, by all means. Use your creativity. But really try. I think the things that happened to me that broke my heart in my life, they're private. They're mine. I can find really creative, useful ones for the audience. You heard me just the description of like the three events for the police officer and the child. Like, I think I have a lot of creativity to help you find your way there, but I'll expect you to use your creativity and your imagination. I don't want to trigger you to think about when you came in and found your child dead. Right? That's monstrous.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. No, that's I love hearing similar things from different people. As we talk about that in class, where it's you can imagine anything, but you do have a limited resource of your real experiences. And on the few occasions that you might use that, it can be traumatic. It can be traumatic to use it over and over again. And then there's the danger of if you are using one of those secret private things, if you ever tell someone what it is that's allowing you to get to that emotional place, that can ruin it forever, where now you can really never use that because it's no longer private to you. So yeah, it's a real dangerous slippery slope. And I think there's been scores of actors throughout history who have gone that route, and they play something so much and so long that they sort of drive themselves crazy and end up having some more mental distress as a result.
And the really nice thing about my suggestion versus finding a real past one is this also means you don't have to judge yourself, because you'll probably judge yourself from how you felt about something. And you don't have to follow a created script. Like the death of a beloved pet doesn't have to be the horrible event you lived, right? And because you're not using the same one, you can rewrite your script and make it useful for what you're doing now rather than the pain of what it felt like at that time. You know, and I just think it's an important lesson for us to take, because there's a laziness to not coming in with choices and goals and things that, you know, coming in, I'll just do it by the seat of my pants, and I'll just do my emotional journey of the day. But then again, live, or actually no, with film too, I won't get the same thing from you when in fifth shot, 10th shot, 20th shot, or the second performance, fifth performance, 15th performance. And everyone deserves the same performance that they've paid for. And they're not going to be able to edit if you're not able to give the consistency of your performance, right? So I think it speaks right there.
Great point. Yes. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This has been amazing. I'm sure all of our viewers have already learned a lot, and hopefully, like me, when I first saw you at Movie Expo, they want to continue and go more of a deep dive when you continue and reopen things. Where's the best spot for people to learn more and to go to? Is that to the website?
Absolutely. So you're always welcome to shoot me an email, you know, or info@RapeYourWit, and we'll get back to you. I have huge lists now of contact people, which I promise I will follow up. When Facebook finally gets up, there's a Facebook group and page. So you're always welcome to join us there. And I always post up, like, I like to post really interesting things about stage combat or film combat or history, weapons, you know, things that I think, and also, quite frankly, when putting stuff up about COVID and putting things up about union things that people should know. So it's a good place for people to share sorts of information. The personal stuff is all cats. Nothing but cats. That's, you know, I'm run by my cat. It's terrible.
Cats with guns.
Yeah. Oh no. Like I'm. No. My cat is like. No. Seriously. Her. Yeah. Her name the is Alice. She has. She cat. Should have her own page at this point.
Right. That's great. Well, thank you for everything you do with Rapier Wits and with TV and film. I mean, what you do makes TV and film the believable thing that we all love, and you do it in a way that you keep people safe and not injured and not dead. So thank you for doing that. Brandon, you want to close us out here?
Yeah. So at the end of our show, we like to close things out with an inspirational quote to inspire our week. And because of the stage combat that we're doing today, our quote is, "No job is so important that you can't take time to perform it safely." And I think we've touched on this many times, especially today, that we have to focus on safety. Our work as actors and performers and comedians is dangerous because we're putting ourselves out there. We don't want to feel in danger when we're holding a weapon or when we're acting out a physical fisticuffs scene with somebody. We want to feel safe and secure in what we're doing. And that's what you're trying to do with Rapier Wit. And that is completely and 100% admirable. And it's beautiful work that you're doing, Dan.
Thank you so very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Thanks to our listeners and viewers. If you haven't subscribed on the podcast sites, do so. Make sure you hit us up. And you can find us on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram. As soon as they're all back up, we'll be in all of those places. And be sure to share this episode out with your actor friends. We have brilliant guests here sharing their knowledge and expertise. And just one of these little nuggets that Daniel's shared with us today can really boost and affect your career. So please share this out with your community. And we'll see you back here next week.
And what do we say? Close-ups make careers. Let's finish it off with a nice big close-up.
Daniel, get in here.
Yeah. Make a fun face. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
All right.